December 7th, 2012, in Mayapur, Nectar Devotion, Class 9. Actually, I realize there's a few more things I have to go over before we can do the other things. A very nice question here about the three different ways that Kanistha, Madhyama, and Uttama are defined. Generally, when Srila Prabhupada talks about Kanistha, Madhyama, and Uttama, he talks about the 11th canto definition in terms of relationships. That's the one he usually talks about. Occasionally he talks about this one from Nectar Devotion in terms of faith and knowledge, and almost never does he talk about the one from Upadeshamrita in terms of Diksha and Harinam.
Actually, in Nectar Devotion, in the purport,
yes, he talks about them in different places, yes. Yes, agreed. Okay, other thing I forgot that I needed to go over was when we're looking at, again, eligibility for starting bhakti. Again, we're talking about pure bhakti. And pure bhakti's got to be anyabhilasita shunyam jnanakarma anavritam. So if your motive for approaching Krishna is not anyabhilasita shunyam, then you haven't started uttam bhakti. So these are examples, four examples of neophytes or beginners who ended up in pure bhakti, but that wasn't how they started. So Dhruva first went to the Lord for wealth. That's not anyabhilasita shunyam. He did not go to Krishna to love him. He went to Krishna for wealth. Therefore, that was not pure bhakti. Now, when he saw Vishnu, he switched. And you may say, well, if I saw Krishna, I'd switch too. Not necessarily. There are many demons who saw Krishna and didn't switch. So just seeing Krishna is not enough. It's free will. Right? You were saying that before?
Yes.
So at a certain point, Dhruva switched to anyabhilasita shunyam. Okay? Dhruva started out doing something that was not uttam bhakti. He came to Krishna, but with motive. Same with Gajendra. Gajendra approached the Lord with a motive. I want this crocodile to stop biting me. I want to get rid of the pain in my foot. But again, he switched, and the acharyas say he switched before he saw Lord Vishnu. Then at a certain point he changed and decided, you know, I just really want to love the Lord, whether I get free of this distress or not. So his initial reason for coming to Krishna was not pure bhakti, but then he changed over to pure bhakti. The same with Shanakarishi and the sages. Their initial reason for coming to Krishna was they wanted answers to their questions. They wanted to satisfy their intellectual curiosity. They also changed and became pure devotees. Now, the fourth kind, the fourth person who comes to Krishna, we call it out of knowledge. In other words, they're already Brahman realized. So basically, they have no material desire to fulfill. They're already anyabhilasita shunyam. And if those people come to Krishna, then they're at anyabhilasita shunyam from the beginning. Now, all four of these people are considered pious souls, because they're coming to Krishna. Even if you come to Krishna for a material reason, you're still a pious soul. But pure bhakti only starts when your purpose for coming to Krishna is unmotivated. Also, there's the end of the third chapter, and all of the fourth chapter are about this anyabhilasita shunyam, that you're not coming to Krishna for bhakti or mukti. You're not coming to Krishna either to get something positive or get rid of something negative. That's not your motive. And wonderful, wonderful, wonderful quotes. Chapter 4 is simply one quote after another, after another, after another, about how love for Krishna is so wonderful that one doesn't care anymore about anything in the world. That one doesn't care about getting something nice or getting rid of something nasty. That once someone has figured out what pure love of Krishna is, then they're determined they only want that. Because somebody might say, well, how is that? That somebody can be anyabhilasita shunyam. And another just interesting kind of side point is that Srila Prabhupada makes the point here that although in one sense we can say that Uttam Bhakti can be applied to any of Krishna's expansions or incarnations, although the definition of pure bhakti was given with
Krishna,
that pure bhakti can be applied to Narayan, etc., that the highest form of pure bhakti is Krishna in Vrindavan. You can have pure bhakti for other forms. You can have pure bhakti for Ramchandra, you can have pure bhakti for Narayan, any Vishnu Sattva, but the highest form. And Prabhupada said something very astonishing, and I'm just going to mention, I'm not going to discuss this, I'm just simply going to mention it. We just don't have time to discuss it, for which I apologize. That generally, what Srila Prabhupada says in his books is he's quoting from the Acharyas or he's quoting from other Shastras. Occasionally he says something that we don't know where he got it from. It's his own realization, or we just don't know. So this is one of those. This is a statement that's not in the original Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, nor is it from the commentary of Jiva Goswami or Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. And it's something very interesting that Srila Prabhupada says. We may talk about this later, but we're not going to discuss it today. This is on page 45, about middle of the page, where here Prabhupada's, the main discussion here is that the devotees are approaching Krishna without wanting liberation. That's the context in which this discussion takes place. Prabhupada says, the other four liberations, although not desired by devotees, are still not against the devotional ideals. And those liberations are to live on the same planet as the Lord, to obtain the same bodily features of the Lord, to have the same opulences as the Lord, and to have constant association with the Lord. Some of the liberated persons who have achieved these four stages of liberation may also develop affection for Krishna and be promoted to the Goloka Vrindavan planet in the spiritual sky. In other words, those who are already promoted to the Vaikuntha planets and who possess the four kinds of liberation may also sometimes develop affection for Krishna and become promoted to Krishna Loka. So those who are on the four liberated stages may still be going through different stages of existence. In the beginning, they may want the opulences of Krishna, but at the mature stage, the dormant love for Krishna exhibited in Vrindavan becomes prominent in their hearts. Now, the only other place I know of where this is mentioned is in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Gopakumar goes to Vaikuntha, and it goes from Vaikuntha to Ayodhya, goes from Ayodhya to Dwarka, and goes from Dwarka to Vrindavan. Actually goes from Dwarka to the Boma Vrindavan, and then goes to Goloka Vrindavan. So that's an example in Brihad Bhagavatamrita of someone who went from Vaikuntha to Vrindavan. So Srila Prabhupada is just simply mentioning here that the residents of Vaikuntha may still be progressing in bhakti and may go on to Goloka Vrindavan. And another point here is that liberation, there are five kinds of liberation. One kind of liberation is to go to merge. The devotees will not even accept that. The other four liberations the devotees may accept, but that's not what's driving them. They're not saying, Krishna, I'm serving you so I can live with you. Krishna, I'm serving you so I can have opulences like you. Krishna, I'm serving you so that I can have a form like you. Krishna, I'm serving you so I can go to your planet. I'm serving you just because my happiness is in serving you. And my happiness in serving you is so great that of course I want to see you, but even if I never see you, I'll be happy just to serve you. Okay.
What about the Kumaras, four Kumaras?
Yes.
They had impersonal Brahman realization, but
yes.
Smelled the leaves of Tulsi and then they got attracted to Krishna.
Yes.
So will this come under this category?
Yes. That could be another Shastric example then. But they weren't in Vaikuntha yet.
Oh, okay.
They were living on a material planet and they were at the gates of Vaikuntha. They didn't go into Vaikuntha. So that's not exactly the same as talking about those who've achieved the four liberations of being in Vaikuntha.
Okay.
Again, that's mentioned in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, but it's not actually mentioned in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So perhaps Prabhupada's pulling that from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, or perhaps that's his own realization, I don't know. But it's not in the... It's an astonishing thing to say, by the way. Okay. Okay, before we go over questions, I just want to give you your homework, home fun, and that is on the weekend, sometime on this weekend, I would like you to go to Prabhupada's Samadhi. And around Srila Prabhupada's Samadhi, there are panels of the nine processes of devotional service and who achieved perfection by which process. So there's panels. I think there's something written there also, I believe. Yes? I'm pretty sure. There's some written explanation. Mars Bricket achieved perfection by hearing, etc.
On the first level?
Yes. Yes, it's outside.
Outside.
It's on the outside of the building. It's not on the inside of the building. So this is your assignment. First of all, on Monday, we're going to be doing chapters 5, 6, and 7. But I'd like you to go to the samadhi, which I spelled wrong here. I'd like you to go to the samadhi and go to look at the outside panels. And read what it says about the 9 processes and who performed each one. Okay? That's something you really do need to know. And I'd like you to get more exposure than just what I'm going to be able to give in the class. Okay, so today we talked about the different stages of Uttam Bhakti, Sadhana Bhakti, the 2 divisions of Sadhana Bhakti, which are? Everybody. Very good. Then Bhava and Prema, and we talked about eligibility to begin the process is just to have attraction, taste, and qualification depends on your faith and knowledge for Vaidhi Bhakti. Qualification for Vaidhi Bhakti is based on faith and knowledge. You do not need to be perfect in your karma, in your varnashram, nor do you need to already become purified by another process. And if you're coming to Krishna wanting something material, that is a disqualification. Although if you're coming to Krishna, that should be encouraged. And yes, okay. Good. So we have some from yesterday that I didn't get to do really good. As devotees, we shouldn't want or need the 5 kinds of liberations, but should we still wish and hope that the other devotees go back home, back to Godhead? We should wish and hope that everybody becomes perfect in love for Krishna. If you become perfect in love for Krishna, you will not see the material world as the material world. Prabhupada says that for the non-devotee, everything is very aggressive, and for the devotee, everything is happily situated. The devotee, they see this as Krishna's world. Their consciousness is not in the material world. How realistic is it that deep down we don't really want this for ourselves throughout this life? It's not realistic. We assume that when you come to Krishna consciousness, you have material desires for bhakti and mukti. If you didn't have any desires for bhakti and mukti, you'd have to be already at the level of the 4 kumaras. To start Uttam Bhakti, you don't have to be free from any desires for bhakti and mukti. You have to be free from going to Krishna for your bhakti and mukti. And that's your reason for coming. Now, if you have desires for bhakti and mukti, you should talk about them to Krishna. But that shouldn't be your reason for being here. If it's your reason for being here, it's something that you need to fix. But of course we're going to have those desires. If you say, first I have to get rid of those desires and then I can take up bhakti, what are you practicing? Jnana-covered bhakti. So we're not saying, first you have to get rid of those desires by some other process and then you can take up bhakti. That's not what we're saying. But we're saying you should come to bhakti with the idea, I'm coming to bhakti to love Krishna. Yes, I have these other desires. Yes, I'm tired of suffering in the material world and I'd like to be liberated. Gosh, I'd like to be liberated. My God, would I like to be liberated? Shush. But at least I can understand that love of Krishna is higher. And therefore, I want to want love of Krishna. I want to want to want to want to want love of Krishna. I'm sorry that I want bhakti and mukti. I don't want to want bhakti and mukti. I wish I didn't want bhakti and mukti. Krishna, help me deal with these desires for bhakti and mukti. I know it's noise, but without the windows, we don't have air.
It's just the...
I know it's noisy. But air, we have a physiological need for air, and we don't have a physiological need for quiet. So, unfortunately, we're going to have to sacrifice one for the other. A really nice, I have it here. Okay. If you turn to page 33, The bottom of page 33. My dear mother, my pure devotees are charmed by seeing my different forms, the beauty of my face, the structure of my body so enchanting. My laughing, my pastimes, and my glance appear to them so beautiful that their minds are always absorbed in thoughts of me, and their lives are dedicated fully unto me. Although such people do not desire any kind of liberation or any kind of material happiness, still I give them a place among my associates in the supreme abode. When we see in our hearts desires for sense gratification and liberation, of course we have those desires. Then read things like this and think, wow, there's something so great, there's something so wonderful that it's better than that. Another really nice one is at the bottom of 34. Oh no, let's go to 35. Is it 35 or where was it? No, I'm sorry. I'm telling you the wrong thing. Let's see. Oh, yeah, this is a better one. Top of page 40. This is a nice prayer to say. So if you find yourself, if you become aware that in your heart of hearts, really what you want is material happiness or liberation. And you will find that. Okay, as you're chanting Hare Krishna, you will see that. Pretty much guaranteed, unless you're like the four Kumars. You will at some point look in your heart and go, oh my goodness, I thought I was here for love of God, but actually I really want material happiness and I really want liberation. You can read this nice prayer. My dear Lord, I have no experience of the transcendental bliss derived from your devotional service, so therefore I have asked you for some favor. But I know that persons who are pure devotees and have, by serving the lotus feet of great souls, become free from all material desires, are always merged in the ocean of transcendental bliss, and as such are always satisfied simply by glorifying your auspicious characteristics. For them there is nothing else to aspire to or pray for. So you can go to Krishna and you can say, you know, Krishna, I'm not tasting transcendental unlimited bliss, and therefore I'm still hankering after bhakti and mukti. But I know, I have some faith that there's something better than this. I know that there's people who are experiencing a happiness so great that they don't care if they take birth again and again to serve you. They don't care if serving you means being lying on a bed of arrows. They don't care. They don't care if serving you means that the demons try to strip you naked in an assembly. They don't care. They're willing. They're getting so much happiness from serving you that even if that involves externally some suffering, they don't feel it as suffering. And they're getting such happiness from serving you that if any material thing is offered to them, they don't even care about it. And I know that there are people who are experiencing that happiness. I want that. And I'm sorry that because I'm not yet experiencing that, I'm still wanting these other things. Please help me to get rid of them and please excuse me. Don't ever be dishonest with Krishna, by the way. That doesn't go very well. You can try it, but you won't be happy. Don't go to Krishna if you really have bhakti and mukti in your heart. Go, Krishna, I just want to serve you. I don't have any material desires. He'll show you. And it won't be a pleasant experience, so better to be honest. Okay, this is another one from yesterday I thought was really good. In the introduction, Prabhupada says that any activity done within the internal energy, these activities are called Krishna conscious. This seems a very broad statement. Can you explain what it means to do activities under the internal energy? In other words, Radharani is in charge of you instead of Durga is in charge of you. Yes, it is very broad. Prabhupada says Krishna consciousness is not narrow or stereotyped. You can do almost anything for Krishna. You can't open a slaughterhouse for Krishna, or a prostitution ring, or something like that. But almost anything you can do for Krishna. It's not narrow or stereotyped. Radharani has lots and lots of different services you can do. There's another one from yesterday that I didn't get to. Isn't it impersonal to suggest our identity as a soul that doesn't get hurt or feel or have any qualities? I didn't say it didn't feel. I didn't say it didn't have any qualities. I said we don't get hurt. How do we create the right identity for our progress in spiritual life as opposed to having no identity? Okay, well, I'm a servant of Krishna is not no identity. I'm a servant of Krishna is very much an identity.
It's the real identity, isn't it?
Hmm?
It's the real identity.
It's the real identity. Yeah, at first it's very general, I'm a servant of Krishna. Eventually we're very specific, I'm a servant of Krishna as his friend. I'm a servant of Krishna as his beloved. I'm a servant of Krishna as his parent. I'm a servant of Krishna as... Eventually it will be very detailed. But that's a very specific real identity. I'm a servant of Krishna. Now, I may not yet know the qualities I have as a soul specifically. I may not know if I'm an argumentative gopi or a submissive gopi. But I know the general qualities of the soul. I know the 26 qualities of a devotee. Those are qualities for all the devotees. Those are all my eternal qualities. So I do know my spiritual qualities. Yes?
What about when Mahaprabhu says, I'm a servant of the 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 servant of Krishna?
Yes, very good. Thank you.
So how does that relate to just I'm a servant of Krishna? I mean, it's not so unclear, but still, it's not.
No, that's his direct. That's what Prabhupada says in his purport in end of Bhagavad Gita. He says, when you go through the Vaya Media of the Guru, the experience is direct.
But what if you just want to serve the service
and
you
love Krishna,
if you find more pleasure serving the service?
Then do that.
But what about the manjaris? They just want to serve the Lord?
That's lovely. There's all varieties. Each of us is going to have our particular relationship with Krishna. And the mood of all the devotees, even Radharani's mood, is that she's a servant of the 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 devotees. Even Radharani's mood isn't, I'm serving Krishna directly. What to speak of anybody else. So everyone's mood is like that. But still, in a general way, you can say, like, Mahaprabhu said, Jivera Sarabhaya Krishnari Nityadasa. So, another time he said, Gopi Bharata Kamala Das 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 Das. But it's not that any time I say that you're Krishna's Das, you have to tell me that I'm Krishna's Das 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 Das. I mean, I don't mind, but you know, you don't have to do it every time.
No, I'm just asking because I like to.
No, it's okay.
It's not that you know.
But anyway, each of us has our own particular relationship. But in the beginning, it can be, I'm Krishna's servant. In the beginning, it's fine to be general, I'm Krishna's servant. And as we progress, that becomes very specific. How specifically am I Krishna's servant? What specific service, what is my specific eternal service for Krishna? So that's not a no identity, and it's not a no qualities. And in this life, I also have certain identity and qualities. But I don't think that's me. I think I need to engage it in Krishna's service. It's like a drama. It's like if you're in a drama and you're on stage and you have a particular costume and a particular makeup and a particular character, and you don't think that's me, but you play your part nicely for the pleasure of the audience. So, just like I played Sherpanika. And also in the Mr. Fish play, I played Maya Devi. My most recent one was Jatila. You get the great roles, huh? So when you're playing a role, you want to play it nicely. So, you know, if your role is whatever it is, Susie Smith, married to so-and-so, living in so-and-so, then you do that for Krishna. But if you think that's who I am, then you're in trouble. Is it wrong to identify with ISKCON... like disciple of so-and-so? Sure. Sankirtan leader, head pujari? Sure. Just don't think it's who you are. That's my role right now. But don't think that's who you are. It's not who you are. It's not eternally who you are. Is that okay or not? I should make decisions about what does a good servant of Krishna or a good servant of the 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 servant of Krishna do in this situation. Okay, I'm in this situation. What would best serve Krishna and Krishna's devotees? Don't think, what would a good wife do? What would a good daughter do? What would a loyal member of ISKCON do? That's in Upadi. What would a good Indian citizen do? What would a righteous person do? What would a servant of Krishna do? No, what a servant of Krishna do might be exactly the same as what a loyal member of ISKCON would do. I would assume generally that would be the case. And generally, what a good servant of Krishna would do would be the same thing as what a good wife would do. But what would be different? You're what? Yes. Who's paying your salary would be very different. You're not going to find a husband who pays your salary, my dear ladies. You ain't going to find it. No husband's going to meet your needs. I'm sorry. You can try it. Get back to me about it later. And nor is this kind going to meet your needs. You can try that too.
What if this kind's paying your salary?
They're not paying your real salary, my dear. They're not. Our salary is love of God. It's what we sell and what we get paid in. Only person who's going to pay you that is God. Now, a devotee may hand you the check, but the bank account they're drawing from is Krishna. Lord Kapiladev says, if a woman thinks her husband is the source of her house and her money and her children, then he's the cause of her death, like the singing of the hunter for the deer. Be a loyal member of ISKCON, be a servant of the other devotees, serve your husband nicely, take care of your children nicely to please Krishna. Don't ever, ever try to do anything separate from pleasing Krishna. I mean, you can do whatever you like, but... I am a servant of Krishna. What would please Krishna? What would make Krishna smile? How can I talk to my husband so Krishna will smile at me? You'll make much better decisions. If it's how can I talk to my husband so that he'll smile at me, you know he might and he might not. And then if he doesn't smile at you, you're going to be so unhappy. But whether he smiles at you or not, you can still make Krishna happy. Whether your temple president treats you with respect or not, you can still make Krishna happy. Don't give your life and your soul to anybody but Krishna. And it may look the same as you giving your life, and it may look externally, but it's not. Now, the way you give your life and soul to Krishna may be serving Krishna's devotees. Maybe serving an institution, but you're giving your life and soul to Krishna. The difference is subtle, but it's a real difference. And you know the difference by whether you're happy or not.
Practically nowadays, we see that in ISKCON, that sometimes our services in ISKCON will require that we have some material expertise as well.
Sure, why not? So, one of the 26 qualities of the devotee is daksha. Yeah, so, Prabhupada said the devotee should know something of everything and everything of something.
So, like, then how do I, I have to be expert, like, you know, I have to qualify myself, I have to, I mean, it's like, you know, if I'm just thinking I'm a servant, then I would probably, I mean, I don't get it, like.
So Krishna's your boss.
Yeah.
He's your company president. Mm-hmm. And one of Krishna's servants has said to you, I want you to do this service for Krishna for which you have to get some training. So I'm a servant of Krishna. Therefore, I get this training so I will be able to do my service for Krishna. I'm an employee in Krishna's company and I have a certain job to do. And to do that job, I may need certain training. That okay? But I'm doing this for Krishna, doing it for Krishna. I just want, Prabhupada said, the residents of Vrindavan, they just want to see Krishna smile. Would you kindly say a few words about the beauty of being a jiva soul? Well, the jiva soul has 55% of the qualities of Krishna. So you can read later in the Nectar Devotion, in the parts we don't study in this class, Krishna's qualities, those first 55, first 55 of the 64 qualities, we've got all of those. We're young, we're always young, we're beautiful, we're powerful, we're kind, we're poetic, we're expert. Is there a way to be really satisfied with being insignificant? Oh, I love this question. How to not be envious about... Whoever wrote this, I salute your honesty. How to not be envious about Krishna's position and opulence? Perhaps in the world of love, size and influence doesn't matter. How to be happy about everyone loving Krishna more than anyone else around? Oh, my goodness. Thank you. Whoever wrote this, you are a real devotee. We're never insignificant to Krishna. Sanatana Goswami says that the residents of Vrindavan, they each think they're Krishna's favorite, and they are. Each cowherd boy, like here, I mean, I'm looking here, I'm not looking here, right? If I'm looking there, I'm not looking there. I can only look at one of you at a time. Maybe I can look kind of at four or five of you with peripheral vision. And Krishna has the cowherd boys all sitting around him, and not only looking, like I have to turn my head, so I'm still facing here. But each cowherd boy thinks Krishna is facing him. And only looking at him. And each one thinks, I'm Krishna's favorite. And when Krishna's dancing with the gopis, they think, Krishna's only dancing with me. Does that sound insignificant to you? God. Most powerful, most beautiful, all-pervading, unlimited opulence is going to dance with just you. Doesn't sound very insignificant to me. And one of the four kinds of liberation is to have equal opulence with Krishna. Krishna is not envious. We're envious. I don't want someone to have equal opulence with me. I want to be just a little better. You know, you can have just a little less money than I have, and a few less nice saris than I do, and your husband's got to be a little less clever than mine. Your children have to be a little less smart than mine. Right? And I want you to have quite what I have. But Krishna's willing to give the jiva equal opulence with him. He's not envious. He just has to trust you, that's all. As in the story of Sudama Brahman, that once you're trustworthy, you have the whole treasury house. When you envy Krishna, you get nothing. When you envy Krishna, then we're a speck of dust, on a speck of dust, on a speck of dust, on a speck of dust, and who cares about us? Nobody, when it comes down to it. I ask this question all the time. Who knows the name? Who here knows the names of their great-great-grandparents?
My husband
does. Your husband does. I find a few.
Great-great.
Great-great. I found maybe four people so far. I've asked thousands of people. Generally, we don't know the names of our great-great-grandparents. That means our great-great-grandchildren will not know our names. What to speak of what we did or what we were like or anything about us. And that's our own family. What to speak about anybody else. Most of these people walking around here, if we died tomorrow, wouldn't even know. Wouldn't even care. Wouldn't change their life one bit. This whole universe is a speck of dust to the Lord. This whole universe and this planet is a speck of dust in the universe. And on this planet, you know, you can't even see people when you're in an airplane. Who are we? We're nothing. This life is 8 billionths of a second for Lord Brahma. What are we going to do? You know, if you're really, 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 really important, maybe your name might be mentioned, you know, when you die. Like in the Bhagavatam, there's a list of names of great kings. Just your name, maybe. You know, if you're really, really, really important, you'll get 2 paragraphs from Back to Godhead for your whole life. Your whole life will be summed up in 2 paragraphs. And if you're really, really big, like we gave Jamuna 1 article, 2,500 words, You'll put your whole life into 2,500 words. And even then, someone walked up to me in Vrindavan and said, you're the famous cook, right? I'm like, no. Now, you know, if you're really, really, really famous. I mean, if you're really, really, really famous, then maybe 2,000 years from now, you'll be in the history book and some poor kid will be studying your name to get the things right on the exam. But even then, in a few thousand years, you'll be forgotten. I mean, who are we? We're nothing. So when we're separated from Krishna, then we're so insignificant. I mean, really. You can make an experiment. Go to someone who really loves you and really cares about you and say, would you sit down for 1 hour and listen to everything I did today? I mean, how important are we? Forget it. But when we're trustworthy, when we love Krishna, when we give up our envy, then God himself will be just with us and be fascinated by us and be attracted to us and interested in us forever. That doesn't sound insignificant to you. Okay, let everyone be engaged in whatever occupation he has now. Simply let him worship Krishna by the results of his activities. Does this mean that following Dharanashram doesn't matter? Yes, it means following Dharanashram doesn't matter, but it's helpful if you can do it. That's very good. And for society in general, it would certainly be very helpful.
So then why... Obviously, I wrote that question. So then why does Srila Prabhupada...
Not obviously. Many people have that question.
Oh, yes. Why does Srila Prabhupada emphasize that...
It's like, why build a temple?
Well, but he said that, you know, like one of the things that he didn't accomplish in this one that he wanted to accomplish is running Ashram. So if it
why build a temple? Mm-hmm. Is a temple necessary? Mm-hmm. No. And in fact, what did Srila Prabhupada say? Mm-hmm. More important than building temples is? So why are we building temples? It's the same kind of question. Prabhupada was very clear. Much more important than building temples is printing and distribution of literature. Could we be Krishna conscious without temples? Sure, but boy, that makes it easier. Aren't we happy that there's a temple? If we could establish Varnashram, it would make things much easier. But don't ever, ever, ever think Varnashram is necessary for bhakti, and don't ever cover your bhakti with Varnashram. Varnashram is material. Don't ever think Varnashram is necessary for bhakti, and don't ever cover your bhakti with Varnashram. That's a very big mistake. But yes, it's first of all, for society in general, it's important. And we don't really have the time, but I've thought a lot about what is Varnashram. I mean, after all, if we look at Varna, Varna just means we're taking all the thousands of occupations people have and putting them in four categories. We're sticking a name on them. We're saying these occupations we're going to put in the Brahmin category, these we're going to put in the Kshatriya category, these we're going to put in the Vaishya category, these we're going to put in the Shudra category, and these we're going to put in the outcast category. Like if you're a liquor salesman, that's an outcast category. What's the value of that? Why do that? Why not just let people call themselves, you know, lawyer and construction worker? And why have these four labels instead of thousands of labels? What's the benefit? And the benefit is that those four labels tell you something about how you can sacrifice, what specific kinds of sacrifices you can do to get specific benefits materially. And that also can tell you what specific kinds of sacrifices you can offer to Krishna according to your nature. So it's quite useful. And why categorize as Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas? Now that kind of happens anyway. Most people go to school when they're young. And most people, at least until recently, got married when they got to be around 20. That's going away. But usually, I mean, until like maybe 20 years ago. So most people went to school when they were young, then they got married when they were at the peak of sexual desire and fertility, and then when the children grew up and they got older, they retired from working, and they retired from raising their family. I mean, that's a natural thing that people do, whether you have the ashrams or not. So what's the purpose of having the ashram system? The ashram system takes that natural human progression and tells you again, what are your duties in each of those stages and what are your sacrifices in each of those stages so that you can get the benefit from each of those natural stages and so you can use your natural proclivities for both enjoyment and sacrifice in each of those stages in Krishna's service. So Varnashram is a scientific system for how to dovetail the material side of your life in Krishna consciousness. Can you dovetail the material side of your life in Krishna consciousness without Varnashram? Yeah, that's what Prabhupada is saying on that page. He said, you don't have to designate yourself like that. Whatever you're doing, just offer it to Krishna. But Varnashram gives you a system how to offer it to Krishna. So it's very nice. If you get stuck in Varnashram as a way to fulfill your material desires, and if you get stuck in Varnashram as a way to be materially pious, you really lost. You've missed both. Then you're just going to get a nice human body or go to heaven, or, you know, then you really... You're not even in yoga anymore. Then you're in karma. You're not even karma yoga. So, you know, we're not interested in building buildings. We're not like urban developers. But we're interested in building a city for people to come and worship Krishna. We could talk about that for a long time, you know. Please don't. If I haven't fully satisfied you in my 3-minute answer, you know, that's fine. Why is associating with the Lord one of the four kinds of liberation? Why wouldn't we want to? Of course we want to associate with him, but higher than that, we want to make him happy. So I'm with somebody I love, and they say, you know, can you go to the shop and get something for me? No, I just want to be with you. So the devotee is the pure devotee. They consider service higher than their own pleasure. The four kinds of liberation, you're still thinking a little bit about your own pleasure there. Of course, the devotee is always going to be with Krishna. The gopis, you know, they don't want to blink their eyes. They don't want to blink their eyes. But if it's Krishna's pleasure to go to Mathura and leave him there, then that's whatever will make Krishna happy. That's their greater happiness. What if your greatest intention is only out of desperation because you have nothing else? How can this transform into love? By good association with devotees and by the process of Krishna consciousness. Okay, another one asking exactly the same question. So maybe you asked, maybe someone wrote the other one. The end of chapter 2, Krishna conscious movement is so nice, you don't need to designate yourself. So why do we practice the Varnashram system? It's helpful. It's helpful. If we get it right. If you get it wrong, it can be dangerous. But if it's helpful, if you get it right, it is helpful. And right now in the world, we really don't have a good way of knowing how to sacrifice for Krishna. If only Krishna is fulfilling all your needs, why do we form all these relationships, especially marital parental ones? Because we're idiots. Yeah. Or you can do it in service. So you can say, okay, I still have desires. I've still got these desires. I have a whole seminar on this, which I also showed as part of my Nectar Devotion class in Vrindavan, but that requires another hour at another time. And then we can have other people come also. It doesn't have to be only people with XX chromosomes, etc. So, you know, if we're honest and we say, okay, Krishna, I have these desires. I have a desire for a man. Most women have a desire for a man. Most. Some don't, but most do. So I have sexual desires. I have parental desires. That's normal. That's normal. That's all right. It's actually nothing to be ashamed of. It's just normal. Doesn't mean you're a demon. It just means you're healthy. It means you're, you know, the only people who don't are either people who are liberated or diseased. So if you're neither liberated nor diseased, you're going to have a desire for a man and children. That's just normal. Okay, how can I use that desire in Krishna service? What is a good... Okay, I'm a servant of Krishna. What does a servant of Krishna do with these desires? A servant of Krishna uses these desires in a way that will purify them. Yes?
We were just reading in the Nectar of Instruction that marriage is encouraged to have Krishna conscious children.
Absolutely. Because if you have those desires and you don't use them in Krishna service, what will you do with them? You use them in Maya service, and that's not very pretty. That will really disturb your spiritual life. So you'd be honest. I have this desire. You know, I want to wear pretty clothes, so wear pretty clothes. or go be skirts. Whatever. Don't wear pretty bikinis. At least not in the temple. So, you know, it's all right. It's okay to be who you are. Isn't that a relief? It's okay to be who I am. It's got to be okay, because you are who you are anyway, and you're not going to change being who you are by making it not okay to be who you are. This is where I am. Okay, this is where I am. How do I get to Krishna from where I am? Okay? How do I get to Navadvipa from here? It's different from how do I get to Navadvipa from Krishnagar. Okay, Krishnagar. Whatever it is. How do I get to Navadvipa from there is different from how do I get to Navadvipa from here. And I have to see, where am I? What do I need to do? And I may see that my desires are foolish. That doesn't make them just go away, my dear friends.
Is it that this desire is actually translated into notion that somebody else is going to fulfill your need, therefore you enter this relationship? Because that desire means I have a need, and I think that other person will fulfill that need. That is the literal translation of our desire, isn't it?
You are very smart. Yes, you are correct. So what do? But I still feel that way. Okay? I can't just talk myself out of it. I can't repress it. What happens if you repress it? You will either get very angry and hard-hearted. We'll get to talk about this another time. We will talk about that on day 7. So either you become hard-hearted and angry and bitter and nasty, and I've seen devotees get like that. And you may get, because everyone has to find some rasa, my dear friends. You may get your rasa then from criticizing and blaming and hatred and, you know, have you met people like that? Yes. Maybe you're like that. I'm sorry. Don't do that. So if you repress those things, they'll bite you. You just can't do it. Doesn't work. Sorry. Don't do that. Please don't do that. Please. I'm begging you. Please don't do that. If you just say, well, this is stupid. I'm an idiot. I'm just going to sit on it. So either you'll become angry and bitter and nasty, and you'll get your rasa from anger and ghastliness and things like that, which will not help you in Krishna consciousness at all. Or you'll have some kind of a fall down. You know, at one point your desires will just explode. Like on the big island of Hawaii, we have a volcano that's erupting constantly. So it doesn't have a big explosion. But normally volcanoes, they build up the pressure and build up the pressure and build up the pressure and then they explode. I know this one devotee woman who divorced her husband after 10 years. She never had an argument for 10 years, and one day she divorced him. And he said, I thought we had a happy marriage. What happened? And she said, she told me, I was keeping all this inside for 10 years. So if you just try to repress, either you'll get very angry and very bitter, or it'll come out all of a sudden in some explosion, and it might not be nice. You might just like run off with the gardener or something. That happens. If you don't know anyone to whom it happens, I can introduce you to quite a few of them. Okay? It happens. It happens to men too, not just women. So better to say, okay, I'm a fool. I think that a man will satisfy my needs, and I think that children will satisfy my needs, and I think that a man and children will make, I think a man, children, and saris, and jewelry, and a house, and a kitchen, and will make me complete. I'm too stupid to know that only Krishna will make me complete. All right, that's how stupid I am. That's where I am. It's okay. It's okay to be where you are. It really is. It has to be okay, because that's where you are. And there's no point in being deceitful with Krishna. He doesn't buy it anyway. He already knows where you are. If you go to Krishna and say, I'm actually more advanced than I am, he's like, no, you're not. Don't do that. Don't pretend to be something you're not. But okay, I think all these things will complete me. All right, what do I do? Okay, so I've got to get these things. I'm really sorry, Krishna. Let me somehow or other gradually, say I'm going to do these things to please you, Krishna. I'm going to serve my husband to please you. And you can catch yourself with your husband. When you get upset with your husband, stop and think, was I thinking my husband was going to meet my needs? Is this why I'm upset? Because my husband didn't meet my needs? Because he didn't treat me nicely? Because he didn't notice I cleaned the whole house and what I really needed was some appreciation? Because I told him what I needed and he didn't care and I really needed some help and support and he didn't do it for me? And I thought he was going to do it for me, and therefore I'm angry, and therefore I'm yelling at him, or I'm pouting, or whatever you do when you're upset. Whatever your particular flavor of trying to get your needs met is. All right, wait a minute. Krishna is the only one who's going to complete me. Krishna is the only one who's going to complete me. I am a servant of Krishna. I am serving this other jiva, so Krishna will smile at me. He's also a servant of Krishna. I'm serving him to please Krishna. Krishna will meet my needs. Krishna will meet my needs in his own way, at his own time, perfectly. Krishna sees what I'm doing. He appreciates me. He's going to give me all the support I need. He's considerate of me. He loves me. I'm special to him. And you might have to practice that in marriage. You might not be able to practice that immediately in renunciation. Hardly anybody can. It's very rare person who can practice that immediately in renunciation. We've seen many people try and most fail. If you're one of those who can do it, try. But be honest. And you might think having this little baby will complete me. And you see that having a little baby is service to him. Our mommy is laughing. And I have to be taking care of my, you know, little children and my growing up children and my grown up children and my grandchildren to please Krishna. But I may need to do it in that way. That's honest. I may not be able to jump to just doing it in another way. Is that okay? Does that help? Again, these are such deep things, folks. You know, I don't know if we can, like, fix them all in a couple minutes. Yeah.
How can we differentiate between a need and a desire?
Desire are the specific ways you hope to fulfill your needs. You're always being driven by needs.
Okay.
You're always being driven by needs. Our essential needs are Satchit Ananda. Because that's who we are. We're trying to be who we are. Prabhupada says in the first canto, the need of the soul is for complete freedom. He says it's the prerogative of the soul to be joyful. We're looking for unlimited, ever-increasing, non-satiating happiness. We're looking for unlimited, ever-increasing, exciting, surprising, thrilling knowledge. And we're looking for unlimited, happy, joyful, vibrant, energetic life. And all other needs that psychologists can identify fit under one of those categories. Like we have a need for security. That's under what category?
Eternal.
What about a need to be, you know, this idea of being insignificant? What about a need for meaning, to do something that has meaning and value? You know, you pick which one. Is that a need for knowledge and meaning? Is it a need for happiness? We're looking for Krishna. Like George Harrison said in the beginning of Krishna book. Looking for Krishna. Everything you do is being driven by a search to find Krishna. And to relate with Krishna in one of those 12 rasas or some combination of them. Everything. And our desires, our material desires, are simply very foolish ways of trying to meet those needs. Every material desire is just a misguided, foolish, idiotic, hopeless, doomed to failure way to try to meet those needs. It's a need to be who I am. That's what we mean by a need.
So does that mean I can use my desire in a spiritual way instead of a material desire?
Yes, if you take it back to its source. If you look at any material desire you have and you follow it back, which is a very clever thing to do, if you follow it back and you say, what need am I trying to meet with this desire? And figure out which of the ultimate spiritual things it is, and then say, how can I meet this need with Krishna? How can I meet this need in an authentic way? You solve all of your problems. It's lovely. And by the way, that's a lovely way to relate to everybody else. That you can, that's actually how the Uttama Adhikari sees everybody, the other kind of Uttama Adhikari, the 11th canto Uttama Adhikari. The 11th canto Uttama Adhikari sees everyone is looking for Krishna, and everyone is trying to connect with Krishna, and everyone is trying to serve Krishna. How do they do that? Because everybody is trying to connect with Krishna. Everyone is trying to serve Krishna. Okay, Gajendra and Dhruva Maharaj were not qualified for sadhana bhakti, but they went back to Godhead because they switched at a certain point. They switched from being disqualified to being pure bhakti. Does causeless mercy interfere with the jiva's free will? No. Causeless mercy gives you an opportunity. Without causeless mercy, you can't get an opportunity. What you do with that opportunity is up to you. But without causeless mercy, you can't get an opportunity. By this causeless mercy, one's love for Krishna can be immediately revived. Yes, that's true, but you can still decide to go with it or not. When Daksha wanted to serve Krishna, to serve Krishna, but as a demigod, he wanted to have unlimited sex life to fill up the universe. In service, but to fulfill his own desires. It was very mixed. And so he chanted the Hamsaguya prayers. He saw Vishnu. He felt Bhava. But he didn't go with it. He didn't go with it. He went with the material side of it, and he became a Vaishnava Aparadi. So the causeless mercy of the devotee can give you an experience of pure love. Whether you go with it is still up to you. For those of you who don't like the fact that you free will, have free will, that may be a disappointment. We're meant to do what is natural for us to do. This is the last one I'm going to do. If it feels very difficult to remember Shastra, although one may very much like to hear and read it, does this mean that we are not meant to be engaged so much in such a devotional pursuit? Or does this mean we simply need to change our attitude? What does this mean? How can the situation be rectified? A number of places in Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada says that we should perform the 9 processes according to our personal taste. So there's a certain minimum that everyone is asked to do if you want to be inviting sadhana bhakti. You know, 16 rounds, at least a daily Shastra class, you know, at least a daily Mangala Arati. There's a certain minimum of the 9 processes that everyone's asked to do. Beyond that is according to your personal taste. Now be aware that if you don't know the Shastra very well, you're going to have a hard time progressing inviting sadhana bhakti because you may not always know what bhakti is. So if you don't have a taste for hearing Shastra, and you don't have any taste for studying Shastra, if that's not your personal taste, your situation is a little dangerous. So to just be aware of that, because that is one of the main qualifications for Vaidya-sadhana bhakti. So I would suggest in that kind of circle, if you really have a problem with this, I would suggest you find at least some Shastra that you like and some way of studying that you like. You know, there's got to be some way. Maybe you just like listening to audiobooks, for example, or maybe you like studying with some friends, or turn the Shastra into comic books or something. Or, I mean, I met with one time 20 ladies at a retreat, and each of them had a different way of study. One of them turned them into songs, one of them made poems, one of them looked at the Sanskrit, one of them made them into questions and answers, because this was all with one guru, and he demanded that the ladies study his books, Prabhupada's books, for 2 hours every day. So they had to find a way to like it. So each of the 20, you know, they asked me how to study the Shastra. And I said, how do you study? How do you study? How do you study? How do you study? And it was all individual and wonderful. So if you don't have a taste for Shastric study, you're going to have a problem, because that's the adhikara for Vaidya-sadhana bhakti. So find something. You know, if there must be some Shastra you like. Maybe you just like songs. You know, that's also Shastra. Then study the songs and learn the stuff. Find something, somehow, so that you're hearing and you're learning and you're getting the knowledge. Otherwise, it's so risky. The situation is very, very risky that you just won't know. And if someone comes along and says this and that and the other thing, you'll get distracted and you won't even know you're distracted. So it you know, I'm not saying you have to sit down for 2 hours every day and just read. not, you don't, you know, if that's not your thing, that's not your thing. And I'm not even saying you have to come to classes like this if that's not your thing. You know, you are allowed to be who you are because you have to be who you are because it's who you are. The famous writer Oscar Wilde said, be yourself, everyone else is already taken. You know, we are who we are, who we are, who we are, who we are. But find some way in who you are. Just like you might not be the kind of person that really wants to chant 150 rounds of a japa a day. Maybe you don't even aspire for that. Maybe you're like, I don't even want to do that. But find a way to relish your 16 rounds. Find a way to make your 16 rounds a happy experience. Don't just trudge through your 16 rounds, even if what you enjoy more is deity worship. Okay? If you can do deity worship 12 hours a day, it doesn't mean your 16 rounds should be a drudgery. Make them beautiful. You know, if you're much more concerned with prayers, if you just love to say prayers to Krishna, still know the Shastra something. Do something. Find some way that works with your personality and your nature so that you know Shastra. Okay? I mean, Krishna can still take care of this. A couple nice purports of Bhagavad Gita in 10, I think. And I think it's in 10.10 or 10.11 and maybe one other place where Prabhupada says, even if you don't study the Shastra, Krishna can inspire you in your heart. But it's risky, my dear friends. It's very risky. And you may waste a lot of time. You may end up in Thailand for a while before you get to Delhi. So find some way. Thank you very, very much. Please remember your home fun. Please remember your home fun to spend at least 15 minutes preparing with chapter 6, 5, 6, and 7. And go to the outside panels of the Samadhi to look at the 9 processes of devotional service. And I will also try to get to these other questions next time. Thank you. Hare Krishna.